One by one, they step into the arena, and you're invited to join them.
Ryan Thomas, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity on 55 KRC.
It's 8:06 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Tuesday to you. Brian Thomas here, welcoming my next guest. Name doesn't need to, you probably know him already. I've had him on the program before. John Lott Jr. He is the author of multiple books, seven actually, including More Guns, Less Crime, Understanding Crime, and Gun Control Laws, a book that we've talked about before. John Lott, welcome back to the program. Good to have you on today, sir.
Oh, thanks. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. The subtitle of your book, More Guns, Less Crime, which is now in its third printing, Understanding Crime and Gun Control Laws. Contextually, I want to talk about Barack Obama's executive orders. He rolled them out yesterday, I guess his proposals for what's going to be enacted from an executive order standpoint. Now, whether or not they are legal or pass constitutional muster, we can talk about later. But do you get the impression that Barack Obama understands the crime and guns relation to crime, or is he missing the boat and just wanting to take our guns away from us? Because I think there are two separate issues here.
Well, I think the proposals that he has are going to have the opposite effect. I think they'll make people less safe than they would have been otherwise. I mean, I have to say, Obama and I both taught at the University of Chicago Law School at the same time, so we overlapped for about 5 years, so I kind of knew him to some extent.
Did he take con law? John, because I went to law school, too. I took constitutional law, and it seems to me that Barack Obama, although he claims to have been this constitutional scholar, didn't take the classes or have a grasp of what the Constitution is, which is a document that limits the power of government.
Right. Well, we could get into a long discussion about that. I pretty much agree with you on that. But the bottom line is the Obama that I knew, the first conversation we had, he indicated to me quite forcefully that he didn't believe people should be able to own guns. And I think once you look at the types of proposals that he has here, and it's pretty clear that that's what he's trying to accomplish. So, you know, people talk about these expanded background checks, but what they do is, I mean, if you go buy a gun from a federally licensed dealer, a gun store, you go through a background check. What this would change is so that if you have a private transfer of a gun between you and your neighbor or a son or somebody like that, then you'd also have to go through a federally licensed dealer to transfer that gun. That adds a cost to it. And if you live in Washington, D.C., it adds about $200 to the cost of getting a gun. If you live in New York City, it's about $125. If you live in someplace like Washington State, it adds about $60 to the cost of getting a gun. If they really wanted to go and have this type of background check because they believe it would stop these mass public shootings, though not a single one of them would have been stopped by this law being in place. But let's say they believe that that's the case. They could very likely get this passed very quickly if they just said, look, rather than having a law-abiding citizen who's going through the background checks having to bear the entire financial burden from this, if you really believe that people in general benefit, then pay for it out of general revenue. But I guarantee you, Obama would oppose that. He wants it so that only the people who are buying the guns have to pay effectively what's a tax there. And, there are other problems, too. You look at the background check system, it's a mess. Virtually everybody who gets stopped is a false positive. So when the president says that there are 2.4 million prohibited or dangerous people that have been stopped from buying guns because of background checks, that's simply false. What he should say is that there have been 2.4 million initial denials. And I'll give you a simple example. You may remember the late Senator Ted Kennedy. There were five times when he was stopped from flying because his name was on the no-fly list.
Exactly.
Would we count that as five times we stopped a terrorist from flying? Presumably not. But that's effectively what's being counted when you talk about all these prohibited or dangerous people who've been stopped from buying guns. What you should say, I mean, it's one thing to go and say you stopped a felon from buying guns. It's another thing to say you stopped somebody who has a similar name to a felon from being able to go and buy a gun.
Which is why, don't you? I was going to say, just why in the list of executive actions he plans on taking, the proposed and much talked about, if you're on the no-fly list, you're going to have your gun rights taken away. That isn't on here, at least that I saw, because that is about as unconstitutional, because there's no due process at all involved in that.
Right. I mean, it's a subjective decision by some bureaucrat to determine whether or not you're going to be on the list or some political appointee. And the problem that you have with that is a lot of people who are on that list, nobody even pretends that they're related to terrorism. It's people that the government may want to talk to, for example, because they might know somebody else who might possibly be involved. And I agree with you. I mean, the courts, even though Obama's appointed about half the federal judges now, I don't think it would make it through the courts.
No, I think there would be no more egregious violation of one's due process rights than having some nameless bureaucrat just add you to a list based upon some unknown criteria, and that immediately eviscerates your right to be to protect yourself or to be free to bear arms. It disgusts me that he even offered it. And then I go back to asking you again, you know, did he even go to con law? Because for him to push that and suggest that that is okay to do, obviously his attorney general sent him in the opposite direction because it isn't on this list. But frightening prospect.
Right. Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, and some of the other executive orders, one of the ones that bothered me the most, and here we go into the area, as it sort of reminds me of my law school days and practicing law, the void for vagueness kind of challenge you can make on laws. The issue of whether you need to get a license, whether you are in the business of selling firearms, under his new executive orders, you could sell one gun, and based upon some unnamed other criteria, one gun could make you, at least in the eyes of government, dealing in firearms or in need of a license and thus subject you to criminal fines and penalties and maybe even jail time if you don't have one, if you sold a gun. How are we to know what the government is going to how the government is going to view us, John, if we sell a gun, say, to our next door neighbor?
Right. Look, the law is very clear on this. There's this term engaged in business, and the law defines it as saying it has to be the principal objective of your livelihood and that you're doing it for profit, okay? So principal objective of your livelihood. You have a legal background. You know this can't be just something that you dabble in when they say principal objective of your livelihood. This has to be your main occupation that you're involved with. And to go and say that somebody who sells one gun could therefore be put into this net that would require these rules. Here's the irony. During Bill Clinton's administration, he imposed lots of fees, regulations to drive people out of having licenses. So under Bill Clinton's administration, there was about a 74% drop in the number of licensed firearm dealers. They purposely raised the fees so much that a huge majority of these people no longer felt it was profitable or valuable for them to be having this license. Rather than simply saying, look, if we want to go and include all these people now to make them licensed dealers again, we'll just lower the fees. They say, we're going to keep the fees really high, but we're going to mandate that if you go to jail if you sell one of these guns without the license. And so what they're going to do is essentially just force these people to say, look, it's not worth it being a collector anymore for this. I don't want to pay these high fees for this. And there's a reason why people dropped their licenses 20 years ago. And you know, so it's just another example to me of the fact that they just want to make it very costly for people to own or sell guns. That's the objective. If they wanted to accomplish what they say, there are much simpler ways of accomplishing it. They could pass tomorrow. He could pass tomorrow this expanded background check, the ideal thing that he wants to have, if he just made three simple changes. One is pay for the essentially taxes out of general revenue. Second is fix it so that the government, when it does these background checks, does it as well as private companies do. If private companies, when they did criminal background checks, had the failure rate that was even a 20th of the failure rate of the federal government when it does its background checks, they'd be sued out of existence. And the third thing is, having to deal with the registration of guns. If you have it so right now, it's the federal government can't technically go and compile a database of people who have bought guns. I mean, the Obama administration's violated that a few times, but it's on the books. But the thing is, when you buy a gun or you transfer a gun through a federally licensed dealer, there's a form that you fill out that's 4473 that they're obligated to have to keep. And after 5 or 10 years of this being in place, what could happen is that, and some people are afraid of, is that the, you could have a Hillary Clinton there who says, look, make a copy of all these forms now and send them into the federal government. And at that point, the federal government would have a fairly good list of all the law-abiding Americans in the country who own a gun. And so they could go and do essentially the same thing you have to do with the NICS checks, the National Instant Background Check, and that is destroy the records at some point rather than having them keep it forever. And then if they made 3 changes, and I think all of them are reasonable, there'd be like no opposition to what the president wants to do. People may not believe that it would accomplish what he wants to accomplish. You look at all the academic studies on these types of background checks and crime rates. People don't find any benefit from them. But if he believes it, makes these 3 simple, I think, extremely reasonable changes, he could get it passed. But he won't do that. He won't make any of these changes because his goal is really just to make it costly for people who own guns. You can't impose a tax directly. You can't go to Congress and say, put a $100 tax on people buying guns. But he can do it indirectly by just calling it these background checks.
So then only rich people can defend themselves and enjoy the protections afforded the Second Amendment. John Lott, my guest today, author of More Guns, Less Crime, Understanding Crime and Gun Control Laws. Stick around. I'm going to ask you about what you whether you think there's going to be any implications, negative, and I believe there will be, on the passing along of mental health records to the federal government, which is another one of his proposed executive actions. Stick around. It's 821 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Hope you're having a wonderful Tuesday. Brian Thomas here with author John Lott Jr., multiple books, 7 books in all, including More Guns, Less Crime. We've talked about that one before. Got him on to kind of go over Barack Obama's an effort to, as we find out, liberate us from our firearms. He doesn't want anybody to own them, and he's trying to figure out ways to make it far more difficult, and that's what these executive orders are all about, knowing full well that they're not going to stop the underlying mass violence and Fort Hood shooter situations or anything like that. I also noted, and I'm sure you did, Mr. Lott, in his executive orders, the mental health records and the provisions for encouraging states to provide mental health records to the federal government so they can analyze those in connection with doing evaluations on gun control, all with a little lip service to saying more people need to get into mental health or are not enough people being served. I figure it's like another list. You have a no-fly list, you're going to have a mental health list. We get the records, we decide that, you know, this person doesn't look like they're worthy or they look a little imbalanced, they're not going to own one. That's going to not only, that's going to drive people away from seeking mental health. I mean, doesn't that conclusion just immediately come to mind?
Right. Well, I mean, you would think that they would think of that themselves. If you were to go and be talking about AIDS or something like that, they would instantly make similar types of arguments, or have in the past. In fact, I've heard the president make those types of arguments in other contexts. So, look, there are multiple issues here. I wish mental illness was a simple thing to fix. If you look at the mass public shootings that have occurred, about half of them have taken place for people who have actually been seeing mental health care professionals prior to the attack.
Yes.
And yet not one single case did those psychiatrists or psychologists identify those individuals as a danger to others. The thing is, people with mental health issues are actually somewhat less violent on average than the general population. And it's such a rare event to have these things. There's a whole literature in the academic psychiatry literature on their inability to properly identify people who are actually going to be dangerous to others. And their main explanation for it is that they're such rare events, it's very difficult for them to go and do it. Instead, you know, what you've had happen, and California, for example, just had a law that went into effect on January 1st, something that the president has pointed to, and that is they've changed some of the rules for being able to go and use mental illness to take away people's guns. Now you can have court hearings without the individual being present, without having a psychiatric expert involved in the case in any way. Before, you'd have to have at least the court appoint some type of psychiatric expert to go and evaluate. And then they've also changed the standard of evidence. You would understand these types of terms where they would say clear and convincing evidence, what used to be the standard. And now they have it so it's basically the judge has to decide, is it possible that the individual might pose some danger to himself or others?
Possible?
That's a fair... Right.
Wow.
So,
that's not much of a standard to meet, honestly.
Right. Well, right. And look, there's trade-offs that you face in life. You know, maybe you could reduce suicides or cause some other problem not to occur. But on the other hand, if you take away people's ability to go and defend themselves when it shouldn't be taken away from them because the standard is too low of a standard, and I'm sure there'll be court cases on this too, but if you take away individuals' ability to go and defend themselves, there can be problems that occur with that. And there's really not a serious discussion about the costs and benefits that exist in these things, that the president will go and point to what he perceives of as some benefit. There may be no evidence for it. Like, it's amazing. You go through his talks after each of these mass public shootings, and after each and every one, he's pushed for these background checks on private transfers, even though none of them have had anything to do with it. And I wish there'd be some reporter that would go and ask him, Mr. President, you've spoken about this many times. Can you tell me which one of the cases, or in fact any of the cases during your administration, where this rule would have made a difference in the outcome for these cases?
Yeah, and he would say, if we could just save one, and these are common sense things, and if it may just save one life and therefore makes it enough. He always moves the ball and says, oh, no, look over there.
Right, but I mean, that makes as much sense as me saying if a gun control regulation costs one life, we shouldn't have it.
I know.
No, I knew you weren't arguing that yourself, but it's just, but the question should be, what's the net effect? And the thing is, so for example, with these fees that we were talking about before, who is going to be stopped from buying a gun? Not you or I, but it may be some law-abiding poor black who lives in a high-crime urban area, the very people that my research indicates benefit the most from having the option to protect themselves. They're the ones who are going to be priced out of it. We're talking about these false positives for the current background check system and how virtually everybody who stopped is a false positive. It used to be, under previous administrations, you would get a note when the government had done its check and realized that they had gotten the wrong guy. The Obama administration doesn't notify people anymore. They essentially force you to have to go and hire a lawyer to go and figure it out. That can cost thousands of dollars. Again, who's less likely to be able to go and pay that? But it's even worse than that, and that is the way the mistakes are made is that they're made to hurt people in certain racial groups. So people, Vietnamese, about 40% of Vietnamese have the same last name, all right? Blacks are more likely to have names similar to other blacks. 36% of black males, because of criminal records, aren't allowed to legally go and buy guns. So it's much more likely that you're going to get a false positive limited to other blacks, you know, if you have a name like Daryl, for example.
Yeah.
Okay? So they're law-abiding, good people who have had no problem with the law, but because they're more likely to go and have a name similar to someone who is prohibited, you're going to make, and they're going to get tagged with this, initial denial there, but they're not going to be told by Obama. So it's mainly blacks who are going to be forced to have to pay thousands of dollars to lawyers to go and be able to go get their name cleared and be able to go and buy a gun legally for self-defense. Why is it that he imposes all these fees that are primarily disarming poor law-abiding blacks in this country.
Well, because that way the poor have to become more and more dependent on the government, then, don't they, John? For the defense, as well as their food and education and clothing and housing, it just goes on and on. Fascinating discussion. My guest today, John Lott Jr., I'll recommend you get a copy of his book, which answers the question, more guns, less crime. That kind of goes back to your earlier point. If you can prove that the legislation they claim is going to make us safer ends up killing you, just read your book, and I think you make a good argument on that. John, it's been a pleasure having you on the program again, and I wish you the best, and keep spreading the word of logic and reason.
Thanks. Well, people can find more about everything we're talking about at our website. It's crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. It's for the Crime Prevention Research Center.
John, I'll have my executive producer put that link up on my blog page at 55krc.com as well so we can get more people there. Thanks again for your
Thank
time.
You.